The Man of God Network exists to help the church in her mission to identify and equip qualified, faithful men for the gospel ministry and for the recovery of biblical reformation in our day. It's our joy to provide you with resources that both encourage you and edify you as you seek to build Christ's church where you are, to the end that He is better known, loved, and exalted. We appreciate the support of our listeners. To learn more about how you can help us accomplish our mission, visit manofgodnetwork.com.
This is a narrated Puritan portion of the Man of God Network, a podcast and ministry of Covenant Baptist Theological Seminary in Owensboro, Kentucky. I have just spent the last couple of hours cleaning up an audio that I received, I believe, from Australia over a year ago when I was doing research on I.C. Herendeen. Herendeen is the one who worked closely with A.W. Pink to publish his works, including Studies in the Scriptures and his most famous work, The Sovereignty of God. And I thought listening to him in his own words from 1976 would be a very edifying story. But also this year marks the 100th anniversary of the beginning of Studies in the Scriptures from January 1922. So with that, we'll listen to the audio, and I hope I've cleaned it up well enough for our listeners to be able to benefit from this autobiography given before a live audience in the year 1976.
My father died in September 1895. My grandfather, Herendeen, lived to be until about 1900, when she died in a hospital or a nursing home in Geneva, New York. My father had two sisters, Miss Caroline Herendeen, who was a registered nurse, trained nurse, and a sister, Phoebe Herendeen, who was married to a man by the name of Frank Burnham. After Grandfather Herendeen died, my Aunt Caroline Herendeen wanted to go to Geneva, New York, to practice nursing. She and Grandmother would live together. After Father died, they wanted Mother to let me come to Geneva to live with them, to stay with Grandmother while my aunt was out nursing. This I did. I lived with them and went to school, to high school in Geneva, New York, until my grandmother Herendeen died in 1901, and then I had to support myself, and in order to do that, I had, of course, to go to work, which I did. I worked for the Geneva Optical Company for a time. In the meantime, there was a business school in Geneva by the name of Haddon and Denman Business College, and I studied stenography, and when I completed the course, I went to work for the Herendeen Manufacturing Company, which was conducted by two brothers of my grandfather Herendeen. I found out that it didn't work so well to work for your relatives. Things weren't altogether too pleasant. So I, through a friend, I got a job with the Lehigh Valley Coal Company in Rochester, New York. Pardon me, I'm getting ahead of my story. I got the job with the Langslow Fowler Furniture Company in Rochester, New York. And later on, I got this job with the Lehigh Valley Coal Company in their Rochester office. Mr. Hamilton, who was the agent in Rochester, was transferred to be General Northern Sales Agent of the company in their Buffalo office. After he had been there a short time, he phoned down one day and said his secretary was leaving him, and he wanted to know if I wanted the job. Well, that meant leaving home with my mother and brother, but I knew there was no future there in Rochester, so I told him I would come, which I did. This was back in about 1906. I was his private secretary for two or three years, and then they put me on the road as salesman for Western New York and Western Pennsylvania, selling anthracite coal. I was engaged in this work until I left Buffalo in 1913. While living in Buffalo, I became acquainted with a returned missionary lady by the name of Mrs. Cyril Bird, B-I-R-D. She had been a missionary in Africa, but her husband had died in Africa, and she became ill, and she had to return to the States, and she had married an oculist by the name of Dr. Herman DeAndrews. My wife and I were out walking one day, and we met on the street, and in the course of our conversation, she told me about an old gentleman by the name of Aaron F. Coles, C-O-W-L-E-S, who was conducting a Bible Truth Depot in Williamsport, PA. She said that he had been selling quite a few copies of a book she had written called Little Is Much When God Is In It, a small book, but a very helpful one. And she had invited him that any time he was in or near Buffalo, to be sure and call on her. She said she had just received word that he was coming on the morrow and wondered if my wife and I wouldn't like to come the next evening and meet him. We said we would, so we went and met him, and was telling us about how he had been conducting a free tract depot in Williamsport in an old building on the back of his daughter's and son-in-law's lot, but that he would have to move the work somewhere else. And furthermore, he was then 80 years of age, and he was looking to the Lord to send him a young man to take over the work. He had these tracts printed all by faith, supplied them to whoever applied for them, free of charge, even paying the carriage charges, entirely on faith that the Lord would supply the money to have them printed and circulated. But he was also looking for another location. He had some friends in Swangle, Pennsylvania, that he had known for some time and whom he visited occasionally. Swangle is about 25 miles south of Williamsport on the way to Harrisburg. It's just a small place of about 100 people, but a very pleasant place. This friend in Swangle told him that was conducting a general store and that he had a building that they used as a warehouse that they really didn't need, and that it could be fixed up and remodeled and would serve very nicely as a depot for the work. The building was available at any time. Brother Coles couldn't take advantage of it because there was no place vacant in Swangle where he could live. During the course of our conversation, our Brother Coles was a great poetry lover, and he could quote lots of it. He was quoting one poem, The Man in the Dory, that I had never heard before up to that time. I wanted to have a copy of it. So I told him to wait a minute, and I'd get a piece of paper, and I'd take it down in shorthand, which I did. After talking along about the work and other things connected with it, Dr. Andrews spoke up rather suddenly and unexpectedly. He said, Brother Coles, here's your man. He knew that I was deeply interested in the work. I felt immediately that was true, that the Lord was calling me to the work. I became more interested in it than ever, and I found out all I could about it. The more I found out, the more anxious I was to get into the work. There was no place for us to live in Swang at that time. We'd have to wait until a place opened up. It wasn't too long before a place became available for us, and was a reasonable price, a very comfortable home. About in those days, back in this was 1912, it sold, I believe, was for between $600 and $700, and we bought it on faith. And in March 1913, I went to Swangle to get things in shape, to get the depot in shape and the house in shape, what little there was to be done. The house had no facilities. We had to use a well, outside toilet, but it was a lovely location. We had two children then. My wife came with them later. She came in May. We had seven children in all, three boys and four girls. They're all living now. The oldest, Norman, and his wife are living in El Paso. Lois and her husband living in Fairfax, Virginia. Irene and her husband living in Levittown, Pennsylvania. Philip and his family living on Oceanside, Long Island. Eunice and her husband living in Northumberland, Pennsylvania, near Lewisburg. Mary Louise, a widow now, living about a mile from Lewisburg. And Paul, the youngest, who was a paratrooper during the war, he and his wife are living in Langhorne, Pennsylvania. This tape is being recorded Friday, August 13th, 1976. After we moved from Buffalo to Swingle in 1913, take up the work there, Brother Coles and I continued to conduct it until about 1916, conducted it together. Then, somewhere about that time, he turned the work over to me completely. Moved away, I saw very little of him after that. He died, I think it was in 1918, Philadelphia, where he went to live. I continued the work on a faith basis entirely, sending out large quantities of tracts to distributors who wanted to distribute them at Billy Sunday's meetings and or wherever. We had one young man and his wife up the Hudson River above Kingston, New York, who had a horse and buggy, and he circulated tracts house to house all through that section. We used to send him quite large quantities, completely without charge. The Lord never failed to meet our need. When the printing bills came due, we were always able to meet them, without begging for money from anyone. I remember one time we needed $200, and I was looking to the Lord for the money, and one morning I received a money order for $100. I thanked the Lord for it, but told him we needed $200. Just a short time later, I received another money order for another $100 from the same party, and that's the way the Lord met our need. In those days, folding machines weren't available, so I had to hire young ladies to fold tracts. One of the young ladies died in a nursing home here in Lewisburg, who told me that the first money she ever earned was what she earned working for me folding tracts. Her name was Anna Morningstar. Brother Coles had a lending library, quite a choice one. He had been sending out books free of charge to whoever wanted them. We continued this after we moved to Swingle, and every once in a while, parties, when returning a book, would ask us if we could get a copy of that book for them, that they liked it and they wanted a copy of their own. Well, in those days, religious book depots weren't to be found all in cities and smaller communities as they are now. We had to order them from Revell in New York, or the Wasser Brothers in New York, or Moody in Chicago, but we could get them. So I told the folks that we could supply them. Well, that happened rather frequently. After a time, we decided to issue a book catalog, small list of books that were available. Finally, the book end of the work became more important than the tract end of the work. In the meantime, different tract depots had sprung up around the country supplying tracts so that the demand on us was not so great. The book end of it expanded, kept growing and growing, till finally I was issuing a fairly good-sized list of books that I could supply, of biographies and commentaries, expositions, and such like. While living in Buffalo, I had been subscribing to Arnold C. Gabelline's monthly magazine called Our Hope. I had taken it for some time, and when I moved to Swingle, I continued to take it. I think it was in the latter part, perhaps, of 1916, when the magazine arrived one month, I found an article in it by A.W. Pink, dealing with a verse or two in the first chapter of John's Gospel. I don't remember which verses it was, but I recognized right away that the caliber of the article was much superior to the other articles that had been appearing in that magazine. There was also another writer that was extra good by the name of John James of Newark, New Jersey, whom I had the pleasure later on of meeting. The next month, Mr. Pink had another article in Our Hope magazine entitled The Philosophy of Spiritualism. I read it and thought it was very good. I had been having some correspondence on the subject of spiritualism, and I thought this would be a good article to put into the hands of such people. So I made arrangements to have it reprinted in tract form. It had come from the printer, and I had sent some out. I have no idea now how many or how few, but I know not too many. But I decided to take a trip to New York and New Jersey. I was gone perhaps 2 weeks. When I returned home, lo and behold, I found a letter on my desk from A.W. Pink from Burkesville, Kentucky. I found that he was a Baptist preacher pastoring two small Baptist churches in Kentucky, one in Burkesville and one in Albany, Kentucky. He had, in that short time, a copy of his article had fallen into his hands, and he was so pleased that I had reprinted it that he wrote to express his appreciation. The more we corresponded, the more we found we had in common, the closer we were brought one to the other, until we became quite intimate by correspondence. It wasn't too long after that he said he wanted to write a book on the divine inspiration of the Bible and wanted me to publish it, and I did. It is still in print, new edition, having just recently been brought out by the Guardian Press of Grand Rapids, Michigan. The next moral book that he wrote was on the subject of why four Gospels, but this is out of print now. As I recall, only one edition was printed. The next, then he wrote me asking if I knew of any Baptist church that were looking for a pastor. He had decided to leave Burkesville. I didn't know of any, but it seems he got in touch with the Northside Baptist Church in Spartanburg, South Carolina, and he accepted the call and moved to Spartanburg, where he was located in March 1917, when I decided to take a visit south, calling on various correspondents that I had in the meantime on the way down. I called on a very close friend living just outside of Washington, D.C., and I, among others, I went to visit him, and I took the night train out of Washington for Spartanburg, where I arrived the next forenoon about 10 o'clock. Brother Pink and I had arranged to meet to identify ourselves, and so when I arrived at the depot in Spartanburg, he was there waiting for me. He was living not too far from the depot, so we walked to his home. I stayed with Brother Pink about 10 days, and then I went on further south. I went to see another close friend by correspondence and a great help in the work of the Bible Truth Depot in Augusta, Georgia, and also another interested party in Americus, Georgia. And then I returned to Spartanburg again and spent several days more with Brother Pink. One day as Brother Pink and I were talking, he said, "Brother Herndon," says, "I want to write a book on the sovereignty of God and I want you to publish it." Well, at that time I had no idea what the sovereignty of God was and what he would have to write. But I felt it was of the Lord, and I felt that I was to publish it. He found out how ignorant I was of the subject, so he indoctrinated me more or less as we had opportunity while I was there. And when I returned home, he continued indoctrinating me in the subject, and I'll never forget the first letter I received from him after I returned home. He opened it. This was in March 1917. He opened it by quoting John 6:44, "No man can come unto me except the Father which has sent me draw him." He underscored the word "can." I had never seen that verse before in my reading of the Bible. I had probably read it and never meant anything to me. But it meant a lot to me then, though I didn't know what it meant. I didn't understand it, but I did want to understand it. So one thing led to another. I would write Brother Pink letters and ask questions, and he very patiently and willingly, cheerfully answered them and made explanation. I didn't resent the truth. I received it and welcomed it. I wanted to know more. I realized what a wonderful truth it was. Well, I see now how the Lord was leading me up to make me willing to publish the book. So when his manuscript came, I devoured it. And then I would talk with friends on the subject, and they would stump me with questions. Then I'd go back to the book again to get the answer. And so as time went on, I became quite thoroughly indoctrinated and very enthusiastic. I wanted to know what a precious truth I had gotten hold of that the Lord revealed to me, and what a wonderful truth it was, how it glorified Him. And how thankful it made me that he had chosen me as one of his very own. I published an edition of 2,000 copies in 1918. But what a time I had to dispose of them. Nobody seemed to want it, and many of those who did get it were not receptive to the truth. They were rank Arminians, but there were now and then one whom the Lord enlightened and caused to rejoice in the precious truth of his sovereignty. But the trouble was, nobody knew who Pink was, and so many were indisposed to receive the truth. But little by little, the demand grew. Ultimately, I was able to dispose of the whole edition by giving away many copies, where I thought they would be acceptable. Then later on, I published another edition. Until now, I think I've had published 5 editions myself, but it's been received a much wider circulation since in other hands. When I was obliged to retire from the work in 1957, it was my largest seller by that time, and it has been widely published since by different publishers. The Baker Bookhouse of Grand Rapids is now the main publisher of it, and it is now available from them, as well as an abridged edition from the Banner Truth Trust in Scotland, and Praise God, from whom all blessings flow. That's the publication of that book, that this glorious truth of the sovereignty of God has grown by leaps and bounds, until now there are many who accept it and rejoice in it, and praise God for it. Bible conferences have sprung up as a result of the circulation of this book. The first conference to result from the book was held in 1953 in the 13th Street Baptist Church in Ashland, Kentucky. Mr. Henry Mann, pastor. And since then, they have held a conference every year. The conference has sprung up in Carlisle, Pennsylvania, and many other places. Many have come to embrace this glorious truth and to rejoice in it. Only eternity will reveal. In my association with various pastors, I would ask them how they came to learn the truth of God's sovereignty, and the usual answer would be, why, through Pink's book, The Sovereignty of God. Somebody put that book into my hands, or they got it some other way. How I do rejoice, and how often I have praised the Lord for the raising up Brother Pink to minister this precious and glorious truth. And how thankful, too, devoutly thankful I have been that he chose me to be the publisher of such a book and to reveal that precious truth to me, which rejoices my heart greatly. And now, going back a bit, I don't remember what year it was, but I think it was in 1901. We were living in Swangle, and Brother Pink and his wife were living up over the hill, 7/10 of a mile north of Swangle, in a country home without facilities. In one of my trips to New York City, I made the acquaintance of a friend by the name of F.H. Mellinger. Later on, Brother Mellinger became a traveling salesman who occasionally came to parts of Pennsylvania not far from Swangle. This happened when he was to be in near Swangle and would call on us when after he had arrived. We knew he was coming, wanted to be with us over one weekend, a lover of Pink's writings, and so my wife and I thought it would be nice to invite Brother and Sister Pink to have Sunday evening lunch with us, and he could meet Mellinger, and Mellinger could meet them. So they came, and sitting at the table, Brother Pink was opening up the scriptures to us in a wonderful, as only he could do, and Brother Mellinger was taking it all in, glorying in it. After a bit, he looked up at me across the table and said, "Brother Herndeen, why don't you publish a magazine and put these good things that Brother Pink is giving us in it?" Well, I said, "Brother Mellinger, I had thought about doing that." And I said, "I will do it if Brother Pink will work with me." Well, the idea quite appealed to him, too. So we took it under advisement and for a bit and prayed about it, and the way seemed open. So we issued the first issue in January 1922. Brother Pink decided to write an exposition of John's Gospel for the magazine, which he did. He had an article in each issue. And when we got enough material to make up a book, I would have it published. So it was published one volume at a time, until ultimately the whole series was put out in 4 volumes. Brother Pink wasn't yet too well known, and so sales of his writings were rather slow, considering the cost. And I was wondering what I could do to make him known and his writings better known. I became acquainted with Mr. Bernie Zondervan of Grand Rapids, of the Zondervan Publishing Company, and I asked him if he would consider taking a quantity of John's Gospel by Pink And he agreed. He took, I believe, 500 sets.
Well, the recording ends abruptly there, but I have in my hand a handwritten piece of paper, now in PDF format, that Herendeen wrote at the end of Pink's life, called The Last Years of His Life. It said that he had had to move back to England after his mother died to look after the estate, and he never came back to the United States. The last years of his life, I judge, he wasn't at all well. An item appeared in the studies of the scriptures, one time asking people not to call on him because he was ill, though he would never say so. If he was sick, he would never let you know it. And he finally died up there. Mrs. Pink lived 10 years and 2 days after him. Pink died July 15, 1952, and she died July 17, 1962. He left the publishing rights of his works to his wife. She told me that when she died, she had made arrangements in her will for the publishing rights to Herendeen, and when he has gotten them, it's anybody's property. Well, I sold my business to Donald Reiner, but reserved the handling of Pink's works in book form. I wanted to see those articles, all he had written, the ministry and the magazine reprinted in book form. So I approached Zondervan Publishing House in Grand Rapids first, and I got them interested in publishing the magazine in the first 6 volumes. The only writing of Pink's in them was an exposition of John's Gospel. As fast as we got enough material to put into a book, we would publish it. Finally, there was 4 volumes in the set. Then after I sold the business, I approached Zondervan about publishing some more works for me, and they published Pink on the Atonement and other works. Then I approached Herman Baker of Baker Bookhouse in Grand Rapids, and he also wanted to publish some of Pink's works. And finally, I got Moody to publish some. And believe it or not, it was an answer to prayer, I guess, because I wanted Moody Press to publish the particular book, if at all possible, on the depravity of man. I didn't think they'd do it, but they did. And they're still publishing it. Baker Bookhouse is working on 3 books now of A.W. Pink's. Next book contains Pink's series on election and justification, and the next on the doctrine of interpretation, and the next will be on some of his other writings. But they left some single articles of Pink's to be put into print, and though their single articles are just as good as the series. Well, I got in touch with a fellow in Grand Rapids who's undertaken to publish all that hasn't been arranged up till now, so that if he carries through with his plan, then everything of Pink's is to be reprinted. It will be in print again. That's a big relief to me, because at my advanced age, it wasn't easy with all of the details that had to be attended to. So that's the story, and I knew that you'll not be disappointed in his writings, because he never went off, as they say, half-cocked. Whenever he went into a subject, he went into it to the depths. End quote. I see Herendeen.